Okay. And our speaker tonight is Billy from Schwanksville. Please help me welcome Billy.
Hey everybody, my name's Billy, I'm an alcoholic. Needless to say, I'm a little nervous. I don't think I've ever spoken in front of this many people. My sobriety date is December 27th, 2002, and my home group is Schwanksville Basic AA. I want to thank Eric and Dave and Jeff for asking me to come out and speak. It's definitely an honor to be speaking at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. But whenever I speak or share, I try to tell myself I'm not up here to sound good or say anything profound. I'm just here to share my experience and what it was like, what happened, and what my life is like today. So, with that, as far as my alcoholism, I feel that, it's in my blood. And I was kind of told that kind of growing up. And it definitely wasn't from my environment. I grew up in a sober house. My father, I never saw him drink. And my mother, maybe once or twice, she had like a fuzzy navel or something like that. But I was told that my father's father quit drinking when he was very young, and he died when he was in his late teens. And he quit drinking on his own. And he was a miserable SOB and never left the house. And my father's older sister, she died at 55 from this disease. And my pop's little brother, when I was a kid, the guy had everything. He had the mansion, the maid, pinball machines, pool tables. They had everything. And today he lives in a mission in Chester. And he's pretty washed out. And when I see him, and he one time had 10 years in the program. And when I see him or hear about him, it just reminds me where I'm going to end up if I don't remember, where I came from, and that I'm an alcoholic. But never saw my pop drink. He quit when I was 3, and he just celebrated 30 years this past April. I got a little sister that's got 8 years in the program. She was a little wiser than I. I had to take a little bit more of a beating. Growing up in a house, my father moved us up to Limerick when I was about 3 when he started out in sobriety. He needed to change his people, some places and things, and we moved up to Limerick. And I grew up in a sober house with 4 insane sisters. And no brothers. 1 bathroom. And it was terrible. I look back and I got to laugh, but like when I was growing up in it was like I got dealt a bad hand. And I remember, growing up we had like 5 channels on TV, and The Wizard of Oz was on once a year. And it was like this big event. And my sisters, my mom had a brand new broom one day, and the girls were playing gymnastics on it. They had it between 2 couches, and they snapped it. Well, they knew there was going to be trouble. So they came up with it that Billy did it, and Billy got the beating and went to bed and missed the one time a year, we would have missed. And I just knew at that point, if I'm going to survive in this house, I gotta learn how to lie. And lie good, because I was honest, and she didn't believe me. So it was 4 against 1. So and I learned from the best. These girls, they were tough, and along with that too, they taught me how to party, and they were wild. And my poor pop, because I was a handful, and then he had the 4 others to deal with too. And it wasn't uncommon for the police to bring one of us home, and we grew up in a sober home. There's a lot of guys around the house that I thought was Uncle Penny, Uncle Bill, Uncle So. They weren't relatives. They were all guys from AA. And we didn't see Dad too much. Both parents worked, and they made enough to send us to Catholic school and feed us. And Dad went to a lot of meetings. And when things got crazy around the house, and there was fighting, You know, he's like, I'm out of here, I'm hitting a meeting, you know, and we didn't quite understand. We didn't have, Dad used to drink back in the day, but, you know, that's all we did. He went to his Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and, you know, growing up in high school, I was not a good student, and you know, I kind of wanted to fit in. And as far as the first time I drank, I used to not really remember when, but I heard my sister sharing one time. And my parents used to go away a lot, and my older sister was throwing a party, and me and my little sister were sitting at the table, and my sister was practicing shots, and she was getting ready for the party, her pregame, and she was, like, gulping down these, she couldn't just shoot them back, and my cousin was with her, and she's like, I bet you your little brother and sister could do that better than you. And she was, like, 6, and I was, like, 8, 9, or something like that, and here we go, you know, and we're just banging them back. I can't tell you if I felt anything. But I can tell you later that night when, like, the house filled up with all these people, and it was, like, the keg and the singing, the dancing, and everybody was having fun. And I was sitting on the counter just kind of, like, taking it all in. And I'm just like, because I'd never been around this. And I'm just like, man, I want, this is what I want, you know. This is, I can't wait till I get to high school and I can do this stuff and, you know, live it up. You know, I get to high school, I start throwing parties. You got 3 stadies, a K-9 unit, and, like, all the locals in the driveway. That was my problem. I always got caught, and everybody else got away with it. I was always getting caught. And then the lies were coming out, and, you know, I'd go out partying and say I'm somewhere else, and then I get in a car wreck or something else, and, you know, the truth comes out, and it's like, you know, they could never really trust me or believe me. I stayed grounded all through high school, and it was real tough, you know, because I wanted to have fun, you know, I wanted to fit in. And as far as, you know, when I really started drinking in high school, like, I was like 5'2" in high school, and I was a little guy, and insecure, you know. But when I drank that booze, man, like, everything was right with the world, like, just everything clicked, like how everybody, you know, usually explains it. You know, I could talk to the girls, you know, I was funny, it was the answer for me, and I drank whatever I could, for me, in the beginning, when I drank, the blackouts came later, you know. In the beginning was like, you know, party real hard, get sick, throw up, spins, pass out, you know, hangover the next day. It kind of changed later on down the road. But, you know, my partying, carrying on, you know, a lot of static with Pop. I had a lot of resentments towards him, my sisters, you know, stuff like that. I couldn't wait to get the heck out of there. And, you know, around the age of, you know, I got thrown out of the house about 17, 18. Kind of worked around, landed at a hotel gig down in King of Prussia, and I was on my own, and it was, you know, my chance of freedom. I actually hooked up with this crew that they worked at different resorts every 6 months, and so this guy comes in, and he says, you know, Billy, hey, I like how you work, you know, we got this little island out in Michigan, it's called Mackinac Island. Actually, told me there was an island they were going to send me to, so I'm thinking I'm going to the Caribbean, and this was, you know, finally I'm going to get what's rightfully mine, and they sent me to Michigan, and if you never heard of Mackinac Island, it's this little island at the top of the, right between the Great Lakes, I think it's Huron and Michigan, and there's no cars on this island, it's all bicycles, horses, and bars, and this is my chance. To get away, to show everybody I don't need them, you know, I could do it on my own, you know, because college was definitely not in the cards, you know, and so it's just, you know, I'm going to make it out on my own and make my own way and party how I want to party and just, you know, do what I want, you know, I lived under Dad's tyranny for too long. It was time to do things my way, so I went out to this island, I get off this ferry, and it looks like an old western town, you know, with the horses and stuff, and the swinging doors, and the you can hear the piano music, and the brothel balconies, and everybody's, you know, singing, and it was just like a wild, wild place, you know. It's all these bicycles lined up, earth cruisers and beach cruisers. The junkier the bike, the cooler it was. And I hitched a horse down to this resort, and I moved into a dorm with 300 English, Irish, and Scottish students that were studying from overseas, and I stayed on this island for 5 years, and I lived in this dorm with all these kids, and it was a co-ed dorm, and we worked around the clock. I worked 80 hours a week at least, and sometimes 100, and you know, they can only fit so many in the plates on the island at a time, so, you know, we worked 2-3 shifts, and I threw parties for a living. I worked in the catering end of the resort, and we'd cater anywhere between 6 to 11 weddings in a Saturday. It seemed like everybody in Michigan was getting married on this island, and, you know, for me, this is where my drinking took off. I turned 21 on this island, and, you know, before, you know, I'm 5'2", I looked like I was 12. You know, I couldn't get into bars. All my drinking was done out in fields and in, you know, garages and stuff. And, you know, I had the ID that said I was 21. And, you know, I go out with these Irish and all these foreign kids. And I had to represent, you know. It was us versus them. And then, at the end of the night, the Irish girls would put me in a cart and they'd push me home. And these girls could drink. And it was like, there was like a nice atmosphere there. There were some fun times, you know, up to a point, you know. And, for me, my drinking, I'd come to in the morning, and we had this like little situation where we'd all run around and wake each other up before it was time to get into work. And we'd work from like 6 till 10, 12 at night, just running. And, you know, for me, when I drank, I didn't eat. You know, it was coffee and smokes. I was like usually still drunk in the morning. For me, it got to the point, the blackout started to come along. And it got to the point, actually it came on pretty quick once I started drinking full time, but I was blacking out 5-6 nights a week. And, you know, but I would never drink during the day. Almost sometimes. You know, like, well... I go all day, and it's like the last party of the night, and, you know, it's a wedding or it's some kind of dinner, and there's all these wine glasses all over, and you're not finishing their drinks, and you can't just let it go to waste. So we'd all kind of bring them all back in the kitchen. We'd all, you know, get a little pregame going, and then set up for the next day. We'd run down in our suits down to the dorm, and I'd stop at the Irish kids' room, have a couple drinks with them, and I'd stop at the Scottish kids' room and work my way. And before I'd find a bicycle to even ride downtown, I was smashed. And then we'd just steal a bike, you ride downtown, hit the bar, come out, steal another bike, and just, that's how you got it, that's how you did it. And then did your best not to hit any of the horse stuff going home. Because that was a big thing. People would be coming in to work the next day, they hit something, and basically all smashed up. But, I mean, this island was insane. I mean, it got to the point, I was 120 pounds, you know. In the morning, I'd come to, you know, going to work. I'd even shower, brush my teeth, really scrub, going to work, and I'm starting to move, and I'd smell me across the room, and the hangovers. I was like in a fog. It was just, and it was painful. They were painful, like to the, you know, where you swear off, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm staying in tonight. You know, I got another 16-hour day tomorrow. Play cool, you know, play some cards, whatever, you know, I get a little food in me around 2 o'clock, and then later on the girls are like, hey, where are we going? I'm like, wherever you want to go. But, you know, it got to the point where I'd be running around at work and I'd start falling down, and I thought I had like some serious medical condition, and I went down to they put me in a cart, sent me down to the medic guy, the island doctor, and he's like, you know, how much are you drinking? And I said, I'm not drinking any more or any less than these people, the rest of the people on the island. And he said, you're dehydrated. There's not enough fluids in you other than the booze, and, you know, you might want to slow it down. You need to start eating some more. You're definitely underweight. So I go back, and everybody's like, what happened? Because everybody thought it was like a tumor. You know, the gossip's running, you know. People thought I was really sick, and I was, but, you know, it was just like, man, they said I partied too much, you know. It was just like one of them, like a badge of honor, I guess you could say. And yeah, this is how it went on. You know, by the end of each season, I was just like a skeleton, and I managed to, like, you know, I knew I drank too much. I try to limit it. You know, I'd switch from, you know, beer to wine. That was a bad idea. And you know, but I drank rum, spiced rum, and I tell myself every time I want somewhere new. Like every 6 months, I send us somewhere new. I lived in Key West for a while. It's gonna be different. You know, I'm gonna eat a little more, take, start working out or something, and get squared away. But like, I didn't have a problem because, like, you know, I'm a hard worker. I make great money. You know, I got all these awards to prove it. I was Employee of the Year. You know, and 2 years in a row. And my ego was like, it was huge. And you know, I'd always get called in the office, Billy. You know, you're a great worker and all, but can you like take it easy? You know, we half the morning we gotta tell you away, stay away from the guests because you look like the Walking Dead and you reek like booze and you know you do a great job, but you just. Looking at you, we don't want you around the guests. But I'm like, yeah, you know, cool, whatever. But, you know, I was kind of weaseling my way out of things. And, you know, they sent me off to Wisconsin, Lake Geneva, at 98. And it's going to be different this time. I'm going to slow down. I lived in, it used to be Hugh Hefner's first Playboy Mansion back in the 60s. And they converted a big resort, and I lived in the bunny huts. And I thought that was, like, cool. I'm there 10 days with a buddy from the island. We go out drinking, you know. And we're only working 8-hour shifts, so we get all this free time, you know. It was something new for us. And I didn't know how to function, honestly, when I wasn't at work. I didn't know how to act. And what do you do when you're not working? You drink. And so we go out to the bar, and we're hanging out, you know, talking about the stories, you know, from the island and stuff. And then it's time to go home. And I don't remember why, you know, quite remember leaving, and I drove there, and you know, we left. I came to the next day, rolled over, my arm was killing me. I got up, I'm like, where's the truck? You know, long story short, somehow got the truck stuck in a snowdrift, broke my arm, and stole a tow truck, and yeah, had to do some time for that one. And but like sitting in the jail, you know, I got a titanium plate, 6 screws in my arm. Nice, got a nice, you know, war wound there. And sitting in the jail cell, calling mom and dad, 4 states away. What happened? I don't know. You know, mom's crying on the phone. Just, I could, you know, I'm not thinking about it then, but now, like, she's like reliving all this, you know. And my relationship with my pop was, so how much do you need? I need about $3,500. You know, I'll put it on your tab. You know, that was our relationship. And never told me to go to a meeting. Never told me I had a drinking problem. He just said the one thing I always hated was, I'm saving a seat for you. And it just burned. You know, and he was the reason why I stayed away from AA. My resentment towards my father. I'm not like him. I'm tougher than him. I can control this. You know, I don't need that AA stuff. And so, you know, after that, you know, just listening to mom, putting mom through that, you know, I got to get this under control, you know. So I stopped drinking on my own. You know, I can do this. And I went back to the island for, you know, it was probably my 3rd season. And I was doing good, you know. I'd go out to the bars every night, drink a Coke with a lime. There was no booze in it. And hanging out with the gang and going back, and I met a girl, she was from Liverpool, England, and we were in love, we fell in love, moved in together, and she'd always ask me, you know, you're out with everybody, and everybody's drinking, and she's like, how come you don't ever want to have a glass of wine with me, you know, and I'm like, look at me, I got scars all over my body, and I got no stories to go with them, and I didn't. I'm a blackout drinker. I wake up and I got new, like, battle wounds, or I'm in the hospital. But for whatever reason, I wasn't at the bar. We were home trying to be romantic or whatever, and I had a glass of wine with her, and I had only one. And then the next night I had a bottle of wine with her, And then on the weekend, I had a case of beer with the boys, and then shortly after that, she ran for the hills. And the heartache, I couldn't, you know, she was, you know, I was devastated. I stayed on this island. I decided not to go anywhere. I stayed on the island during the winter time. They shut the whole island down. And if you ever saw The Shining, that's what it was. The lake freezes over, and we lived in this resort, 15 of us. It was huge. Snow was up to my chest. It was 50 below wind chill. And I only worked 8 hours a day, rerouting every single bathroom in the whole joint, and then the rest of the time I just got polluted. And just locked myself up in the room and drank in my sorrows and all that stuff. And things got wild out there. I mean, you know, I had no godmother. You know, I grew up with, you know, Catholic school, nuns whooping me, stuff like that, you know, just, and for me, things were starting to get bad. We're like, the foxhole prayers start coming in, you know what I mean? And up there, there's a lot of reservations and American Indian natives. I had to drink with these guys all the time. And we're on a snowmobile, and we're riding across the ice to the mainland, like 3 miles, like on the ice. And that's how crazy these. I was just along for the ride. And, you know, we go across to the mainland, because the casino's over there on the reservations. It's, you drink for free for playing. So play some nickel slots and drink all night. And, you know, coming back on the ice, you know, I was driving because he was way more trash than I was, and he was like 300 pounds. He was a giant Indian, and his name was Fudd, and he was my drinking buddy. And I'm driving his wife's snowmobile, and he's on the back, and we're out in the middle, we're about a mile out on the ice, and I just lost control. He got knocked out. I'm laying there in the middle of the ice. The snowmobile's on top of me. And it's just like listening to the ice, you know. And it's not like crackling. It's like mile-long cracks. Like, and it's like, and people died out there. And I'm thinking, this is it, you know. God, get me out of this. I swear to God, I'm never going to drink again. And Bud comes too. And he picks the sled up, gets me up, picks me up, puts me back on it. He drives the rest of the way home. And we just continued to drink. I mean, that's how it was. I'd make a deal when I was in a jam, when I found myself in a spot I couldn't get out of. Instant face. And get me out of this, I swear to God. You know, I'm done. And it was never the case. And I didn't think twice about it, you know. And yeah, my time on the island, it got pretty ugly to the point where like I was doing some other things. Failed a drug test. You know, they let me stay, finish out the season, but it was time for me to go. And I knew it was time for me to go, too. You know, I needed to get back to reality. I was dying on this island. It's the island. I got to get away from the island. So I got offered a job. And over the years, too, I kind of worked my way up the ladder. And I was I ran the department towards it at the end of that, my stay there. And I got offered a job as a director. Nice title. Down at Panama City Beach, Florida. New start, you know. It was like the big time, like, you know, it was a big resort, biggest on the beach, you know. Just had to be the spring break capital of the United States. But I'd be okay. And it's going to be different. But my problem was everywhere I went, I took me with me, I found out. And, you know, I was there 6 months. And the stress factor, I mean, I was in way over my head, you know, and just trying to keep things together and, you know, trying to manage people is not easy, you know, that was me. And, you know, when I first read the big book, they talked about the director. And that's what sold me when I was reading that book. And they said the director, when he's running the show, you know, and all the lights, trying to control the lights and all those people, and if they just do what he said, and if they just worked as hard as him, and, I mean, that was my mentality, you know. I was afraid to leave because just things wouldn't be right, so I would always, you know, I was there all the time, you know, trying to control 80 people, you know, 60 of them didn't speak, you know, English, they were from, like, Lithuania, Czech, you know, having interpreters and stuff like that. I mean, it was just... And with the stress level, my alcohol intake went up. You know, I said, the heck with it, man. I got my own liquor cabinet there at the resort, and I was drinking like halfway through the night. And then, I was there 6 months, and plus I'd go, and I had stuff too. Like, I'd go home, and I lived 2 blocks from those beautiful beaches on the United States. And I had a nice 2-bedroom apartment all myself, beautiful furniture, huge TV, all the toys, And I'd lock myself up in my house and be like, is this what it's about? I got all this stuff. I'm like, I'm here. I've arrived. What is wrong with me, I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, is this it? And I just tricked myself stupid every night, and then the falling down, my stuff with the dehydration, all that stuff kicks in again, and problems at work, and I'm there 6 months, and I'm driving home one night, all lit up, and I'm driving home about 2 blocks from the house, and I drove a truck back then, and next thing I know, my truck's on the side, and it's spinning, and when it stops, I climbed out the passenger door, and I'm standing on top of the side of my truck, and there's a woman laying there. And there was somebody already standing over top of her, and they just said, man, she's gone. So then I just jumped off my truck, and I was just like, it's over. It's all gone, Everything I've worked for, it's all gone, And I thought for a second about, running, and then I was like, you can't run, And I just went and sat on the side of the road waiting for him to come get me. I looked up the road, and there's a guy moving around a little bit. His motorcycle smashed up the street further, and he died on the way to the hospital. So the cops took me to the hospital. They took my blood, and then they let me go home. And 6 months later, they charged me 2 counts of DUI manslaughter. So I was numb, that's all I could tell you. But, and if everybody from work and everybody's, there's a lot of questions whose fault the accident was. They were out drinking. He picked her up at a bar. Everybody on the beach was loaded all over the place. And everybody's like, Billy, it wasn't your fault, man. He hit you. Come out with us. Stop going home and locking yourself. That's all they had to say, That was my green light. That's all I wanted to hear. And I drank for another year. Waiting, court hearings. And I'd go in there all hungover, it's over anyway. I'm done, Just going to work, going through the motions, trying to make the bucks to send the pop to help pay, I had a cold pop again. I'm in real trouble now, to tell you I wasn't drinking and driving, I'd be lying too. Because when I drink, old Billy Reason goes out the window, I'm driving. I just need to go for a ride. And it got scary, because something inside me told me, you're going to do it again. There was some kind of, the whole situation was kind of wishy-washy, but you're going to seal the deal, man. I just found myself one night, after a year of heavy boozing, just, numb, on the ground crying out, I can't do this anymore. And I called my pop, and I'm like, Dad, I'm going to go to the meetings. And he said, all right, I want you to do 2 things. I've been waiting a long time for you to say that to me. And he's like, I want you to get a sponsor. And he said, not someone nice either. He said, someone that you can't work your little manipulating ways with. And he said, 2, you got to stay away from them girls. And I said, it's spring break, Pop. Come on, you might as well shoot me now, because I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, that was a big problem with me. But he said, it's the only way. And I knew something in me. I knew I had to do this right. This is the only chance I had. To me, over the years, God put his foot on me every once in a while. And then I'd straighten up, and then I'd do my thing again, and he put his foot on me a little harder. And then, he really put his foot on me this time. And I know next time, if I don't do this right, I ain't getting up. And So I remember I go to my first meeting, I go and I sit down, I'm just going to hear what they got to say, no one's going to really notice me, you know, and I go and I sit down and just everybody turns and looks at me. And I'm not thinking, I mean, I'm like all in the papers and stuff too, I'm not even thinking about it, and you know, they won't recognize me or nothing. I mean, it was big news down there on that little beach, and you know, I'm sitting in there, and there was this guy, he started sharing, and I'll tell you what, he was scary. He looked like Jesse Ventura, and he was a steel worker from Brooklyn, and he worked on the Trade Center, put the needle on it way back in the day, and big scary man, and he just was dropping that wisdom and stuff like that in a rough way, and he was a biker, you know, he rode there on his big old Harley, and he's a Vietnam vet, and I went up to him, and I said, you know, I need a sponsor. And he goes, yeah, so? And I was just like, you know, I said, will you be my sponsor? And he's like, yes. And he said, you meet me here every day at 11 o'clock. It was a noontime meeting. I said, you don't understand. I'm a pretty important guy down at this resort down here. And you know, I don't know if I can make it every day. And he said, kid, if you don't make it here every day, there ain't going to be no job to go back to. And he just started chopping away at me. Like, your best thinking got you here, kid. And he started, I had nothing to say. Like, saying all that stuff that just, like, hit home. And he really chopped me down. And I needed a lot of ego deflating to reach any kind of humility. And he was good at it. And I'd show up there at 11 o'clock, and he'd be there. The coffee's made, his arms are folded. Where the hell are you at? And I'm like, it's 11 o'clock, and he's like, you got to beat me here. So I'm like, so it's like 10:45, he's just opening the door, you know, and it's just like, you know, I'm there at 10:30, and then I'm like sitting in this room, and all these people that are, there's no kids getting sober down there, and it was a treat when I came back up here, but I mean, everybody down there's got like, this youngest has got like 20 years sobriety, they're all retirees from like Michigan, Chicago, they call them snowbirds, they were down there vacation and I retired down there, but I was like the newbie. I was the only one like really getting sober at that time, so like I was their pet project. Like I had everybody, I had them all. So I'd be sitting there around this table, and they were all wearing their, you know, their Hawaiian shirts with the zipper scars. I mean, these guys are pretty old. And one guy would be talking about Chicago and AA back in the day. And then, like, I got my education. They taught me, you know, talked about Bill and Bob and how this whole thing came together. And he gave me a big book. And he told me to read it. And he told me to call him every day. After the third day, I didn't call him on the third day. And then he called me and chewed me out. But we weren't talking, you know, just calling, just, how you doing? Okay, good. And it was like, small, you know, that's it. You know, I just want to keep tabs on me. And he told me, you better get on your knees every day, kid. You need a little bit of humility. He gave me this little card, because I didn't know how to pray, you know. And for me, you know, he took me through the steps. The whole powerlessness part, I got that. You know, after the accident, and I couldn't stop drinking, yeah, I had some kind of problem, and I knew it, and I couldn't stop. And my life was definitely unmanageable to the point where, you know, nothing but chaos comes out of my drinking. And I had that down, you know. I came to believe I needed a God, I needed him quick, you know. That's what I was like, man, if I don't... for me, the situation I was in, I needed some, like, instant faith, I was praying all the time, and he gave me this little card, little blue card, and it's, it's thank you, you know, God, for another day, you know, I pray your will be done in my life, please keep me clean and sober today, and it was, like, real simple, you know, and he told me, you know, did you get on your knees today, and I'm like, I kind of did, you know, and he's like, he was a real stickler with that, like, get on your knees, and humble yourself before God, you know. There's two things you ought to know. There is a God and you ain't him, you know. Because I tried to run the show all the time. And it was just, you know, it was, you know, my first 6 months, it was like these guys, You know, I didn't love myself. I was a scumbag, you know. Everything that went down, the way I treated people, the way my life was. And, you know, he took me through the steps as far as 4 and 5. I was probably about 5 months in, you know. And I did it. I had it all on an Excel spreadsheet, and I brought it in. And he's like, "What is this?" And I'm like, "It's color coordinated." And he's like, "You write it down on a piece of paper like everybody else in this program." And he threw it away. But this guy, like, I had to read how it works every day. You know, I got to the point where I'd be like, I'd hold it, and I'd just be reciting it because I knew, you know, word for word. And afterwards, he'd jack me up and be like, "Yo, they asked you to read it, not recite it." You know, and he called me talking to a girl one time. I must have said something she thought was cool or nice, and she came up and started talking to me, and I crossed the room. "You get the hell away from that girl," you know, embarrassed me. And I was like, and I was about to, you know, like, who does he think he's talking to, you know? And something in me, you know, I was going to tell him what was up, and then something inside me told me, "Nah, Billy, you know, you need this, man. You need to do this right," you know. I just put my head down. I walked away. Like, I was so, you know, I was willing to do anything at this point. And, you know, 6-7 months in, after going to a lot of hearings and stuff like that, they sent me, they offered me a deal. Like I said, there was a lot of questions about what the accident was. They offered me 30 months in prison. A lot of time on paper, and they took my license for life. So I said, "Where do I sign?" You know, for me to go in front of a jury and then to throw all this out there, you know, I'm not a good gambler, and it was all or nothing. So I've got 30 years. So in May 2003, I went off to Florida's finest correctional facilities. And I worked on the chain gang on the Alabama state line. It was interesting. There was a lot of fear. Like, I watched too many episodes of Oz, and I was scared to death. This is prison, you know what I mean? And I'm kind of cute. I went in there, and I just went in there. I did a lot of praying, but you know, everybody's just in there, just trying to do their time and trying to go home. And they put me on the work squads, and I was at one camp for a year. And I went in there, and there's this. And I played a lot of dominoes and worked a lot on the. You know, we cut down trees, worked down the swamps. I mean, dirt roads. I didn't know these places existed, you know, down here on the, you know, I thought it was in the movies, you know, we're picking up trash, you don't see nothing for like 5 miles, you come up on a trail, there's a Confederate flag flying, and you're like, "Let's just keep going, boss." You know? And, I mean, it was, we were out in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, one Friday, they called AA, so I'm like, "All right, what am I going to do?" You know, because nobody was going, and, I said, "This is what I got to do." So I went to a meeting, and there was a guy sitting there. It was just him. And this man drove 2 hours every Friday to bring a meeting into this prison. And he sat in chow hall for an hour. No one ever came. And they would drive home for 2 hours. And I would always ask myself, "Can I do that?" You know. He was there just in. He wasn't bringing. He was there just in case someone showed up. And then one day, I showed up, and for a year, it was me and him, and I'll tell you what, that got me through a lot of times. You know, I had my regular routine, you know, waking up at 4:30, had my little meditation book, my big book, you know, step book. I got a lot of mail from a lot of people in the program from down there. You know, they hardly knew me, and they sent me letters, put me on the call list. You know, I called these people, and there were a lot of kids in there, too, that I talked to that killed their girlfriend, killed their best friend, killed, and they were doing 15, 20 years and stuff. And I'm like, why me? You know, why do I get the good deal, you know, type of thing? And, you know, I had to kind of let that go after a while. You know, and my first chance at honesty, real chance, you know, it was like, I was a year in, they snatched me up out of my rack, shackled me up, threw me in a van, took me back to Panama City Beach, put a suit on me. On the way to this federal courtroom, they're telling me, all right, the woman's family's suing the guy's family, saying it was his fault. You got to get on the stand and tell them what happened. Tell them how this guy hit you, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what? You know, what's going on? You know, and they were kind of prepping me, and they took me, but you can't say that you were convicted of the crime. They can't know that you... So they took me in here, put me on the stand, and it's kind of run through my head. Here it is. I can say how this guy hit me, and, you know, wrongly accused, doing time. It wouldn't have got me off any. You know, it was, I forget what kind of suit you call it, civil or I don't know what you call it. They were just trying to get money or something, but I got on the stand, they started asking me the questions, and I was just, I'm like, I don't know. I can't tell you that. I can't tell you that he hit me. You know, it was just, you know, I told him, you know, in my heart, I felt like I had contributed to that accident more than, you know, in my heart, something told me that you had a lot more to do with that kid, you know, and she didn't win, or the family didn't win, and, you know, they took me back, on the rack, and continued my time, but, you know, they moved me around a couple different camps. 3 months left, they sent me to work release. They called AA, so I went in. And I'll tell you, I mean, in prison too, I mean, there was booze everywhere. I just got to say that. I mean, just being locked up ain't going to keep you from drinking. I mean, I'd be walking down the road picking up trash, and there'd be like a 12-pack of beer. And everybody's looking around. The boss man drives a little further down the road, and we're just like, you know. And everybody at this point, you know, I'm rolling with these guys for a long time. They're like, who gets Billy's beer? They call me Philly because I talked funny, and I was an Eagles fan. You know, who gets Philly's beer? And cause they all knew I didn't drink, and they knew I was serious about it. And, you know, I let them have my share and didn't think twice about it. I'm at the work release, and I go into Nicole AA. I walk in, and there's my sponsor, Leo, and his buddy. And, like, they turn around, and it's just like, whoa, this is like one of them God things, you know what I mean? And I had a lot of them God situations. To backtrack real quick, when I got there was one other kid that was my age getting sober on the beach. Actually, I had 5 years. And he didn't really talk to me. Very standoffish. I didn't talk to him, you know. And one day I came out of my house, and then he came out of his house, and we were looking at each other. We lived directly across from each other out of this beach. The two only sober kids. And I was like, wow, what a coincidence, you know what I mean? And we spent many a morning and night on his porch or in my place, drinking coffee, talking AA, and it was definitely one of them God things. You know, I always forget to mention that, throw it in there, but that was, you know, a lot of God things. You know, the people that he put in my life, and just the way things went and turned out. But, you know, the last 3 months of my sobriety I spent meetings with my old sponsor, and they gave me a silver dollar, and down there traditionally they give you a silver dollar with a hole drilled in it for your first anniversary, and then every year they drill another hole in it. So I was getting out, and mine had two holes in it, and you know, my first 2 years sobriety anniversaries where I was locked up, and July 4th, 2005, he picked me up at the airport, and they actually work, I was in contact with a lot of people at work, and they said, Billy, you still got the job. You got the money, you know, the same, we'll take care of you, you know, don't worry about it. And I knew in my heart, I was just like, I can't, you know. And I was scared to death because that's all I ever knew. Throwing parties for a living. And it was scary, you know. What am I going to do, you know? And I told him I can't. And I got out of probation and stuff, transferred up here. I moved back home with mom and dad at 31. And, lived in the same room I lived in when I was a kid, and very humbling. A lot of fear. What's gonna, you know, what's gonna happen, you know? And I just kept going to meetings, you know, going to meetings. People, you know, everybody knew my sister and my dad, so like I knew everybody then. And then everybody got me out to meetings all the time. And a buddy of mine that I knew from high school, I hated his guts, and there's a friend of my sister's, and my, she told me he can't wait to see you. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And like, this guy had like maybe a year and a half sober, and he was there with his hand out when I got home, and he was just like, you know, he had that look in his eye, like sobriety, you know, he had something going for him. And he's like, you know, Billy, anytime you need to get around, I'm there. And he took me down to Schwanksville. It was kind of a new meeting. It was called Basic AA. They didn't even have their first anniversary when I got there. And I just said, hey, this is kind of close to home. I'm just going to make it my home group. And got involved there, started chairing. You know, I got a new sponsor. And I decided, you know what, if I'm riding with this guy for the long term, you know, I just started over with the steps. You know, I want this guy to know everything. I did another fourth and fifth of him because I want this guy to know who he's dealing with. And, you know, he needs to know, you know, what my deal is. And I'm glad I did. And the guy I asked, you know, his name's Tim C. He's a great guy. You know, great sobriety, real peaceful man. You know, he just had that something about him, that, you know, it's attraction. You know, I was attracted to this guy's sobriety. I like the way he handled himself and the way he talked about recovering the steps. And, you know, I got involved with this guy. Tried sponsorship. Man, this one kid came along to Schwanksville, and this kid was beat up. And he was like 19, 20, and one look at him, I knew, I'm like, this kid's had it, you know, and he looked like me, and it reminded me, I mean, I come to meetings, I got a built-in forgetter, man, so many times, you know, looking in the mirror at the scars and all that stuff, and you know, when I drink in front of me, none of that stuff's in my head, and that drink's looking pretty good, you know, and I forget, you know. For me, I need to remember where I came from, because even now, like, I look back, and it seems like a dream, like, doing that time and all that. Everything that happened, hey, sometimes feels kind of like, you know, like it was a dream. It might have happened to somebody else, you know. But, you know, I gotta remember this, you know. And I met this kid. I didn't sponsor him. He had somebody else as a sponsor, but he had a car, and he called me every night. Even when I didn't want to go to a meeting, and we went to meetings every night for like my first year, and back home, and it was good for him. It was good for me, and you know, just sharing my experience with him, and just kind of all that newness and just that's coming. He had the same ideas and stuff like that I did when I came in, and you know, he had a buddy that just came in who I ended up sponsoring, and this kid, we hung out for about 4 months or so, and then, you know, he got drunk, and they told me, you know, kid, you know, I'm not want to be perfect at, you know, I wanted to, you know, I want to save everybody, you know, that's how I saw it. I wanted everybody to get sober, but I got to learn that not all of them make it, or at least not when you want them to, and, you know, I kind of gave up on that sponsoring thing for a little bit. I met a kid who hung out for me for a little while. And I didn't put a whole lot of effort into it, you know. And I wasn't really sponsored, but I was there just to kind of help him out. And he ended up dying. And it really made me think about, could I have done more? You know what I mean? And I'm probably like a year home now. Still focused on me, mostly. And, you know, that incident right there kind of like was a kick in the chest. Like, you know, kid, you know, you were blessed with a second chance at this life. And, it ain't your life to run no more. You know, this is your new job. And, you know, I just, every morning I remind myself, I'm supposed to be still in that rack, you know. And, you know, every day I try to make it, my primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So, I mean, you know, after that incident, like, the next kid that asked me to sponsor him, I was like, yes. And, like, we were, like, steps, you know. We were lots of meetings, lots of commitments. The kid was making coffee, you know. Shortly after that, I picked up another guy. And I'm like, all right, slow down, you know. And it was funny, too. This kid, my little sister, she brought, guess who's coming into the rooms? I'm like, who? She said, you know, Mike V. And I'm like, no, great. She's like, I gave him your number. Like, this kid was in her class growing up. I knew this kid. And I come out of, you know, in Catholic school, when I come out of my class to go to the bathroom, his desk was always in the hallway. And, I didn't like him. And,
But I was told I can't be selective about who I help. And thank God I wasn't, man. Because we are incredible friends today. And, you know, and the relationships, you know, with my father, you know, with my little sister. She was my arch enemy growing up. And we are the closest of friends today. And she was with me, like, every time I tried to get this thing, she was there. And, you know, and my poor mother. I hadn't cried in years. Even before, you know, before the... I cried when that English girl left me. I think that was the last time I think I cried. And to sit down with my mother and try to make amends to her, I was a blubbering fool. And just, it was just coming out of me, you know. It was just the right time, like, we were having dinner. Dad wasn't around, and, like, we started talking about stuff, and it just started coming out of me. You know, for her to just thinking about it gets me all weirded out. But you know, I put her through hell, and she just said, you know, all is forgiven, son. And she came around the table, and oh, we were both crying. You know, and I gotta share about, you know, I had this situation. You know, everything was, I was kind of doing some contract, like working with contractors. But my life wasn't going anywhere, really. You know, it was just like, I was just hopping from job to job, doing whatever, going to a lot of meetings. Got offered a job at a company selling computer software. I'm totally not qualified. No college education. And I went in there, convicted, you know, felony charges, put it all down, interviewed me. I didn't get the job. I got the job. So they brought me in, and... you know, I worked in this one division for like a year, and then they promoted me to the sales position. And like all this time, like, you know, what am I doing here? I'm not a salesman. I'm, you know, and people are buying stuff from me, you know. And the stuff ain't cheap. You know, they're just calling me, want to buy it. I'm like, all right, you know, give me the money. You know. And while I'm here, it's just like, and I'm there for, I've been here for 2 years, and I take the bus. Something gets me everywhere. And it's like a 2-hour ride in the morning, and then I get to work, and people see me driving their Beamers and their fancy cars, but I'm walking up the street with my backpack, and you know, I'm Billy Bus Stop, they call me. You know, and I go out to lunch with these guys, you know, the first time, and everybody gets their beers, and I went to the bathroom, I came back, and we were at lunch, and everybody's having beers, and they're like, you know, we didn't know what to get you, you know, what do you want? And I'm like, I'm just going to have a Coke. And they're like, nah, seriously. And I'm like, I'm just going to have a Coke, you know. I said, if I have a beer, I ain't going back to work. And everybody's laughing, I'm laughing, and they stop laughing. I'm just like, and they didn't ask, you know. And, you know, I break out the corny lines, like, you know, they say, well, why don't you drink? I tell them I'm allergic. I break out in handcuffs, and they get a kick out of that. But they don't really know, you know, I don't disclose anything. I don't tell people I'm AA. You know, I was told you go around telling people you're an AA. If you drink, that tells them that AA don't work. And that's how simple they broke it down to me. So, like, I don't go screaming from the rooftops that, you know, I'm recovery. But they know I don't drink. And they know Billy must have gotten a lot of trouble because he hasn't driven in like 2 years. And they say, well, how many DUIs did you have? And I said, one too many, because it was only one. And they say, well, how many? And I said, enough. And that's all I got to say. And then there's times when someone will come up to me and say, Billy, you know, there's something about you, you know, it's different. And I know you don't drink. I know something happened, you know. I got a son, and da 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 da. I got a husband, da 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 da. And then we go have lunch, and then we go talk about stuff. And I might disclose a little more about where I'm coming from. And you know, that's like, wow, that's why I'm here. You know what I mean? Sometimes when I'm speaking and I'm like telling my story, and it's people are like, and I'm like, I'm doing this kind of talking all the time. Like, you know, is this what I'm gonna be doing the rest of my life? You know? And I'm sharing, I'm thinking this one particular time at a meeting, and this lady comes up to me after the meeting, she's crying, and she's like, you know, thank you for coming out tonight. She's like, I got a son, he's going through what you went through, and to hear you and to hear your message gives me hope. And I'm like, alright, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And
you know, this is my new job. And that sales job, that pays the bills, and it's paid off nearly, you know, I had to pay funeral expenses. It was part of my deal. And it's almost done. And it was almost $30,000. And so I talked to the PO. He loves me. He thinks I'm the greatest thing. And talked to an attorney, and, you know, come April, I could be off parole, you know, 6 years early. And they're talking about giving back my license. And it's been 8 years. And I almost cried then, you know. But, you know, it's beyond my wildest dreams, man. You know, but I got to remember, you know, it could all go away. You know, they talk about death. That's too good for me. They're going to send me back to the joint and for a long time. That's where I'm going if I ever decide to pick up a drink again. And, but I like this way of life, you know. It's taught me acceptance. You know, this is how it is, kid. This is the hand I've been dealt. And, you know, I just gotta suit up and show up every day. And, the people I have in my life now are amazing. And it's, you know, I always make it a point to be there for the newcomer. That's my thing, you know. It's, I see a newcomer, I reach out, and I try to hook them up. Because, you know, I know some people. I help introduce people and get them suited up. Because, I mean, that's, I mean, to me, that's what it's about, you know. We're here for each other. We do this together. This is a we program. And, you know, I tried on my own too many times, and it just didn't work. But I think I'm close. I might be over. But thank you, everyone, for listening.